Thank you, sir. Here's 2 points before we get started. Didn't really realize it when I was doing it, but all these verses or all this lesson kind of is from, I guess, from my lens, my point of view of working in the world and raising 10, 11, 12-year-old children. And I guess that's kind of the slant that I actually subconsciously, I didn't even know I was doing it until I went back and looked at it, and I'm like, this is all about working and raising kids. So I'm not apologizing for it. That's just kind of where I guess it came from. Easier said than done. I've also realized is basically two types of conversations outside of biblical terms is one, you having with your children, or two, usually your spouse has with you. So telling Wyatt or Raylan how to do something, and they say, well, that's easier said than done, Dad. That's true. Or Amanda telling me how to do something, whether it's change the garbage disposal or something like that. I'm like, that's easier said than done, Amanda. So, but there's many verses in the Bible that are very easy to read, easy to understand, and maybe I'm putting this on myself. Sometimes we just don't put it into practice, or we just don't do what the verses tell us to do. And my goal today is to read them, refresh them, maybe glean some examples of how you did put this into action, and we can all learn from one another, and just be better at what we know we need to do. So I certainly welcome your comments, your advice, examples. So let's start with Galatians chapter 6, 9 and 10. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then while we have opportunity, let us do good to all the people, especially those who are in the household of the faith. Simple question. Are there times when we're in a position to help somebody that we don't do what we're supposed to do? I would probably say yes. We've all had times. And the question is why? And for clarification, I'm not advocating a man to help 4 grown men change a tire on the side of I-10. That's not what I'm talking about. It's what our talents are, what we have the actually opportunity to do. So the question is, are we looking for ways to help people? Are we thinking about it? Is it on our mind? Simple as, are we sending cards to people who we can? Gift cards maybe for somebody who needs, you know, food or meals. And then earlier in the year, I taught the 4th, 5th, and 6th graders. And it goes to talk about teaching our children to be proactive in this effort. And I ask them every week, give me an example of a good deed that you've done. And so you can imagine the first week was, I clean my room. Did you clean your room? Well, my mom told me. Okay, that's not what I'm talking about. So, but as the couple months went on, it got better. And I think you can see, you need to compliment and see Damien today. He helps Candace when she's here. He waits back there for her. That's the attitude. That's what we're looking for, is ways to help. And obviously, we're an example. Our kids watch us. Are we doing what we're teaching them to do? Are we encouraging them to do that? Are we praising them when they do that? Any comments, questions on that? Am I off? Am I spot on? Am I way off?
You know, Neil, in the context, your point is well made, because talking just previous to the verses you have about sowing to the flesh, and that goes all the way back to chapter 5 and verse 13. And there he talks about verse 15, people biting and devouring one another. This is brethren. And in contrast to the verse 20, the outburst of anger, disputes, and dissensions, to be able to always act, verse 22, with love, and joy, and peace, and patience, and kindness, that's easier said than done, especially when there's a sharp feeling between people, when there's been controversy, like in this case over doctrinal issues, to manifest the fruit of the Spirit, times like that, it does do good. And then in chapter 6, when somebody's struggling under their burden, verse 1, to be able to have the courage and love to go and try to restore them, it's easier said than done. So your point is really made well in that context. I think about that with me, because that's the time when I'm really tested.
Josh, you had something?
Yeah, you said, you asked the question why. Like, why would we not help someone out or choose to do this? In that verse 9, the idea of losing heart. heart could be in reference to your love for either your neighbor or your brother or spouse or child, and that can fluctuate from being strong and you're motivated to help them or serve them, or you can lose it. It can weaken, and therefore your motivation decreases, and it likely reflects in the actions you take. So the way we can maintain the love we have for brother, the love we have for our child, is, you know, reflecting and appreciating on how valuable they are to us, how valuable they are to God. And that, you know, reflecting on that rather than maybe our selfish interests would prevent us from losing heart. Rather, we would have a full heart motivated to serve and not grow weary.
And Josh, I think go along with that, and I think that probably goes to every single one I picked, is obviously this could be a way for people to, you know, to notice, well, why are you helping people? Why is your children helping people? Why do you do that? That could be an avenue to talk about, I'm trying to serve God. I got to serve. The number two commandment is to serve my neighbor. So all these could be used as an example of having a conversation with somebody about why I'm doing what I'm doing, because we all know none of these verses today the world does. I mean, some might do, but not most of them not. So this could be an example for us, an opening to talk to people about, well, why are you doing that? Matt?
So what's interesting about that is the fact that this verse was written in the first place, you know, really shows the importance, or it shows that this can happen, that we can, over the course of time, get tired of doing good to each other.
Yep.
And when you're looking at the context, it's the context shows that it's more focused on doing good to the brethren. When you go back up to verse 6, it says, let him who has taught the word share in all good things with him who teaches. So, I kind of take that as kind of a Christian-to-Christian relationship.
Sure.
And so it really underlines the importance of staying focused week in and week out in what we can do for each other, because there's always going to be work to do.
Absolutely. And you know, there's one word in here that doesn't say that probably most people use. It doesn't say anywhere, you know, help people unless you're busy. Everybody's busy. Everybody's got 1,000 things pulling up their time. So that's not an excuse that we're busy. We have to make time. If it's important to us, you have to make time. Now, I don't know about y'all, but I love to move people. I mean, when you buy a truck, somewhere in the fine print is you're going to get asked to help to move people. So, but that's what we're supposed to do, to help people who can't help themselves or are not able to do it. And that's a conversation you can have with your children. You know, we're helping these people today because when you're elderly and, you know, older, do you want people to help you? It's, you know, it's always looking for those learning opportunities. Any other comments before we move on to number two?
Yes.
Okay.
Something I can say you won't say. You talked about Damien back there helping people, looking for flowers for Candace. There's another young man back there that evidently has been taught to help people, continually opening the door, hold it open for people.
Well, he's going to need a lot of help in his own life. So it literally might take. Well, we work on it, yes, but it's going to be a group effort with him.
Neil?
Yes, ma'am.
I think there in 6:4 it also gives us a warning. He chose us to examine our work. Sometimes we get a little, I'm doing so much. How are we getting left available? We're satisfied
sure.
with what we're doing. Or we've done it in the past and we don't continually examine, you know, maybe I should be doing this, or have I done enough?
Sure.
That kind of thing. You know, and of course, if you look at Jesus, we can never do enough.
No, you're right. We always fall short if that's our measuring stick. Yes, sir?
And verse 9 starts with a hand. You know, when we look back at verse 7 and 8, we see what the hand is linked to. That don't be deceived, God is not mocked. Whatever man sows, that will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will also reap. Will also of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap. And you don't, when you look at verse 9, you don't really think about the contrast that verse 7 and 8 is drawing between what is coming from your work. You know, we talk a lot about this is bad, don't do this. If you keep doing bad things, then bad things are going to happen to you, or you're going to, you know, if you do bad things, you're going to end up in hell, right? If you do good things and you obey God, then you'll end up in heaven. But when you link 7 and 8 with 9, then you see that there's a tendency, or there's going to be a point where you may just get tired of, you lose sight of the reward of doing good.
Sure.
You know, if you do good, then you're not always going to get good things, aren't always going to happen, right? No good deed goes unpunished.
Yes, but if you do bad things, more likely than not, eventually bad things are going to happen to you. I mean, and also, there's just it's a good feeling to help somebody after you're done. I mean, I think there's some, you know, self-benefit there. Obviously, what we're doing is also pleasing to God and helping our brethren or our neighbor. Okay, that was 15 minutes on one verse. We're not going to make this. All right, let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. Verse 5. Slaves, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling in sincerity of your heart as to Christ, not by way of eye service as men pleasers, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will render service as to the Lord, not to men. Let's go ahead and turn to 1 Peter 2. I know you're not very familiar with 1 Peter or the Peters at all, but we'll review it. 1 Peter 2. Servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. Well, it talks about slaves and masters. And say, does this even apply to us anymore?
Yes. Employee relationship with the boss.
Absolutely. We should be good employees. We should be hard workers. We should not be lazy. Once again, we're setting the example for ourselves, for our children, and most of us who are still employed on the 15th and 30th like for that check to come in. In this day and time, if not, then it won't. Work is such a foreign concept to most people nowadays, and we talk about it later on, but we need to work. We need to be good employees. One, so we can help support our families and support the work here. And you also heard the statement that, you know, broke people can't help anybody. So, to buy a meal, to have them in your home, there's some cost there that we need to be able to support. But that's not common today. And then we can go and drop down to 3, and we can flip it around. Colossians 4:1. Masters, grant your slaves justice and fairness, knowing that you too have a master in heaven. So this pretty much catches everybody, right? We either work for somebody, everybody has a boss. We either work for somebody or we could be a middle manager where people report to us. How should we treat them? With respect, fairness, knowing that we also have a master. Point number one come into play is those who are supervisors or managers. Should we do good for people? If someone is continually late, this will be at 8 o'clock, and they're always there at 8:30, time after time, do we just fire them, write them up? Or do we have a conversation with them? Say, hey, what's the deal here? Something going on? Maybe there's something going on at the house. Maybe you can work with them. Maybe there's things we could do instead of just write them up or fire them that maybe they're a good employee. That's doing good to them, also maybe helping you and helping your employment. Comments, questions on the employee-boss relationship? I know some of y'all have been able to get out of that cycle, so and that's good. Congratulations.
You know, so often, though, especially if the manager is unreasonable or unfair or something, I know just listening to others and even when I work, you may suffer at their hand because they are unfair. But that doesn't give you a right to revile or to complain or not do the work or, you know, rebel in some way. First Peter covers
right.
that.
And to your point, we're not even serving them. It's the insincerity of serving Christ. And I would submit that we're in a better position today than this audience has written to. You know, it says slaves. I don't know if slaves could leave or change masters. We have that ability today. It's certainly, that is easier said than done. But we can find different employment, find a better boss. And you've heard the statement too, that people don't leave jobs, they leave bosses. If you have a good boss, that's worth a lot.
And you know, you talk about our example. It's those specific moments when you're being treated unjustly, or at work, something unfair happened, and then the spotlight's on you, and that's your chance to be an example of a submissive servant or employee. As we follow God's word, we are exemplifying that in our work, in our walk at work. And the spotlight gets on you when those troublesome times come. And that's our chance. The regular in and out daily routine, that's, everybody kind of complies with that. But it's when those critical moments happen that the world and the way the Christian responds can be starkly different.
Absolutely. It's almost being tested. How are you going to respond to this? You know, and sometimes there's an art to just keeping your mouth shut. You complain, your children might hear, your coworkers might hear, and you're labeled as a malcontent. So it's not always the easiest thing to do, but it's what it says in here in the verses.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
These verses we're reading about slaves and masters. Sometimes when we think about slaves and masters, we have a connotation that this is like we had slavery in this country, the evil practice. But both in the Old and the New Testament times, there were slaves and masters. They were considered like household employees.
Right.
And we know in the Old Testament, there's extensive regulations on the master-slave relationship, how they were treated, and all a bunch of regulations. So we think about the evil practice of this country. Well, back in those days, people were like household servants.
Right.
So slavery, we think something evil. It could be used as evil. In a lot of cases, it was a regulated household employee that's
probably closer to where we are today versus slavery that we particularly think about. Okay, anything else? We'll move on to number four.
Neil,
yes, sir.
If we pay attention to the world, then the world really gives us permission to disobey these passages, because you hear a lot of people talk about toxic environments. You know, that's kind of a buzz phrase for your work is bad, so you have permission to do whatever you want or to do a bad job. But obviously these verses tell us to stay focused on doing our work and to develop an attitude like the attitude of Christ. Or an attitude of not just, this is my job, an attitude of, I should be doing this as if I was doing something for Christ.
Absolutely. That's a good point, Matt. Let's go to 1 Peter 2. Peter 2, 13 through 14. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as to one in authority, or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. Let's also go read Romans 13. Verse 1. Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and for those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. Well, this is certainly a hot topic today, isn't it, on government authority, who's running the country. So, whether it's this administration, the last administration, it's pretty much, 50-50 that Either one of them doesn't know what they're doing or insane. So, how will the world receive this instruction that we need to submit?
Not too bad.
Not at all, right? Let's burn ourselves. Let's protest. Let's do everything but what we're supposed to do. So, that's the world's attitude. What's our attitude? How should we react?
Pray for our leaders.
Excellent idea. It's kind of like you tell your children, though. No one can control you except yourself. How are you going to respond? What's your attitude? You're in charge of your own attitude.
It's interesting that Paul wrote this while Christians were under Roman law, Roman and circular history, didn't treat Christians very well. And yet Paul summons, you know, to submit to their authorities and pray for them.
Right.
Which is an amazing fact if you consider how the Romans treated Christians.
I guess I agree with you. I guess 2 points. One, you cannot have anarchy in a functional society. I think that's just a basic concept we'd all agree with. And for me, I think it's another reminder from God that this world is not our home. All things, good or bad, are temporary. They're going to change. So if you like it, it's going to change. If you don't like it, it's going to change too. So this is not our final destination. Yes, ma'am.
Also, it gives us the opportunity to keep in mind that, yes, he's commanded us to follow the rules that are set here by government and whatnot, but that God's commandments and his will for us to do should come first, ultimately. And if something was ever set in place that contradicts his will, that we need to follow God before we follow our government.
Absolutely.
Like in Acts 5:29. Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men.
Absolutely. And those guys just got slapped on the wrist, right? No, they were beat. So, yes, it's... And I think we all agree, that's... Yes, Betty?
I don't think that means that you can't legally do things. Even Paul had something to say.
Sure. We have rights. Absolutely. We can utilize. Absolutely. I agree with that. Anything else before we move on to number 5? All right. James 3. James 3, starting in verse 4. Look at the ships also. Though they are so great and driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder, whatever the indication of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet boasts of great things. See how great force is set aflame by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, the very word of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members, at which defiles the entire body, and sets on the fire the course of our life, and is set on the fire by hell. For every species of beast and birds of reptiles and creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth came both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way. I think this is one of the constant things we're under attack with. You cannot go anywhere or almost watch anything without vulgar and ungodly language. And we have to be on the awareness and defensive for it not to seep into our lives. Whether it's, you know, TV, radio, billboards, things on there that your children see, you have to answer questions. What does this mean? You're like, I'm not ready to answer this. I shouldn't have to. But we do. Whether it's, you know, a baseball game or just whatever. So how do we guard ourselves from being like the world? How do we protect ourselves from sliding like that?
See, it may be easier on those of us who grew up in families that the parents were Christians and we had a godly atmosphere. But I have baptized people out of the world that was their language. And while they, I think, were sincere and determined to serve Christ, it was easier said than done for those people completely change their vocabulary.
Sure.
Because they might be on the job, for example, maybe a new boss, and things are not going right. Well, guess what happens with the dove? And so, not that it excuses it, not that he didn't try, but I can understand that the title of your lesson is very applicable.
I think it's, you know, we got to be aware of and work on. And you know, I only know one really set of industry, and the language there is can be very, very, very colorful. And it's, you're like, how do you talk like that? You know, but they do.
You don't necessarily have to be cursed too, to demean people with your words. I think also that's what James is trying to bring about here too. That
sure.
The tongue is a fire. I mean, I've seen people just cut people down unnecessarily without using one cuss word. And we still have to be careful how we talk to each other.
Absolutely.
How we talk to our wives, how we talk to our children, our subordinates, if you're a boss at work.
It's a great point, Alex, because words can never be unsaid, right? Once they're out there, they're out there.
In Ephesians 4:29, it talks about not letting unwholesome words, but something that's good for reputation. You can be guilty in a moment of anger or in frustration to our children or to our mate or to someone, you know, that we live around and everything, and our neighbors. Just say something unkind or not for edification,
sure,
but to tear down. And even especially with our children. You know, when we're, instead of using the moment to teach, we say unkind things or we tear them down instead of trying to build them up in a positive way.
Right.
First part of James tells us how dangerous the tongue is. The tongue is also reflected in what we write, our words that we write down. And I think in this day and age, when we talk about social media, we look at social media, we can see how people are going way off board on the inflamed things that they write. And we as Christians need to be careful when we use social media, be careful in our words, we control the things that we write, not to blame others about the things that we say. So I think that's an area that we need to be watchful for. And we can see just how damaging people have done things on social media, the things they write, how inflamed.
Sure.
And it shows us that you've got to be careful.
Right. And your point, Rocky and Alex, emails or texts, there's no tone. You can't read tone. You can't read what. So you can say something and not mean it a certain way, but someone take it that way. So, you know, I think it's a good point.
Yeah.
Yes, sir?
Proverbs has numerous, passages about the tongue. And, you know, lying lips, a proud tongue, whereas, you know, on the flip side, there's slow speak and quick to hear. And there's other proverbs about a good word can bring health. And, you know, I think it uses language like bring meat to the bones or health to the bones. The tongue, it reflects what our inner attitude is. And at work, you know, Matt mentioned that word toxic. In a toxic environment, there's just all this negativity that relates to your management, relates to your work. And it starts to weigh down on people's just overall life. And they go home from work, and it impacts their life when they get home from work, or they're driving from work. And it makes life almost a toxic life. But we have the opportunity to, whatever position we're in, instead bring a positive, you know, productive, appreciative atmosphere, the opposite of a toxic atmosphere.
Yep. Are we the good that the world needs? And it's temporary, right? Everything's temporary. And something that I'm surprised nobody said here is who we spending time with. If we spend time with the people in this room, we're not going to hear foul language. We're not going to hear things we shouldn't hear. If we spend time with the world, we're more apt to hear some of that. Going to explain.
So when he starts chapter 3, he talks about teachers.
Right.
And it's an environment of teachers, and there was evidently factionalism spirit that's going on when you read verse 13 to the end of chapter 4 among brethren. And sometimes when brethren are at odds over attitude of personal gain rather than the truth,
they say things about one another. It may not be curse words, but the teacher can use his tongue to, as Alex was pointing out, to cut those who will not follow or agree with
them. Right.
So sometimes between brethren, there have been cases in business meetings where men have said things to and about one another that's shameful. And then the question is, what happened on the way home? That's what we say about one another.
Sure. Well, and 2 points, I guess, on that is, one, if you have an issue with somebody, I know this is rare, but go have a conversation with them. Talk to them about it. You know, a pleasant conversation instead of posting on social media. You know, everybody's a hero on social media. They can post whatever they want, and, you know, there's no consequences. So, and go have a conversation with them. Be nice. You know, sometimes you might have to agree or disagree, and that's okay. But we don't do that today. We don't have a conversation with people about differences. Yes, sir.
When we're talking about words, and words are important, and social media and that sort of thing. But the old adage, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words. And we communicate strongly from time to time words in the pictures that we relate one to another.
Sure.
Especially with social media.
Sure.
So you have to be careful. That message that you put out can be very divisive. Even, you know, like I say, Photoshop change.
Right.
So
going to
be really careful with the pictures.
I mean, obviously, there's a diverse group of age group on social media. I mean, I didn't grow up with it, right? I don't really participate very much. But the seventh graders, that's their life. That's all they know. I mean, that's how they communicate. It's, you talk to business people, and the whole dynamic how you do business is changing because of social media. It's just this evolving thing that no one has a grasp on, and you got to be careful with, to your point, because it can morph and change into something you never thought it was going to be. But it's not going away, and we got to get to figure out how to address it or how to handle it, or at least have a conversation with our children about it, that things you do today could have long ramifications, you know, down the road, that you might be a totally different person, you know, then, but your past is still digital, where, you know, mistakes, you know, we made growing up, they're gone. They're no longer around. No one can remember them, but that's not the case anymore. Philippians chapter 4, number 6. Verse 11. Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means. I also know how to live in prosperity. And in every circumstance, I've learned that the secret of being filled and going hungry both have an abundance and suffering need. One of the downsides of watching, being a sports fan, is the constant dollar amounts you hear being thrown around, whether player X is getting this, or, you know, team XY is worth so much. We're constantly bombarded with numbers and more on the wealth side. So, you know, how much Warren Buffett's worth, or, you know, Jeff Bezos from Amazon. And I think if we're not careful, that mentality can seep into our character of like, man, I don't have enough. I got to get some more. How do I get more? If I work more overtime, or, you know, people down the street got a brand new boat, I don't even have one. So I think we have to be on guard about the circumstances we are. Are we content? Do I want people to succeed and earn more money and promotion? Absolutely. But we have to be careful of what's our goal, what's our desire, what are we giving up? Are we working a bunch of overtime? Are we gone? What example are we teaching our children for as money and things that go along with it? I think it's a unique challenge we have today with so much information about money and wealth and Alex.
And if you're not careful, it causes resentment. I see a lot of complete resentment before anyone has more money than they do.
Right.
I was having an argument with a debate, I would say, with a fellow Christian in New York City. He's telling me that when Christ spoke about Lazarus and the rich man, that's for us Christians to point out the evils of being rich. I said, no.
Nope.
That's an example of who lived righteously and who didn't live righteously.
Right. And I mean, the rich man wasn't, he wasn't in trouble for being rich. It was his attitude. His attitude, his, you know, long-term thinking. And we're all constantly bombarded, like, got to be putting this much in your 401k. You need this much to retire. You're coming up short. You're coming up short for college. It's just, it's a constant battle of today versus eternity, versus long-term. This is temporary. Questions, comments on that?
I think it's fitting that verse 13 is when Paul says that he says that I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. It obviously highlights what kind of the focus of your entire lesson is on, is that it's easier said than done. This being content both in when you're in need and when you're in abundance is obviously something that is so difficult that Paul would put in this phrase that we need, you know, this is something that is especially an example where Christ can help us in that. Christ is the one who we need to rely on to develop the attitude to be content in whatever circumstance we're in.
And I think this is a prime candidate for children. Like, you need to struggle. You need to understand what, you know, it is to have, you know, hot dogs 3 nights a week. You know, you can't go out to eat or buy a new car. If kids don't struggle, then how do you ever appreciate when you're no longer struggling? How do you appreciate what you have? Appreciate hard work? How do you got there? If they're just given everything, there's no appreciation. You know, that's what it should be. And that, you talk to, you know, young college graduates today, and that's not, well, I didn't be making this. What are you talking about? You have no experience. You haven't done anything. Why should you make this? Because that they've been told they should. There's no realistic expectations. So, that's, yeah. Yes, sir.
So a couple of these are, it would be easier said than done. Some of them, it's hard to actually do the thing. The other is, it's easier to do something rather than not do it. And in this case, if you're trying to rise in the ranks, you have to put in some effort to, you know, get a raise or promotion. You have to put in that extra week in shift, you know, to buy that boat. And also with the tongue, you have to actively open your mouth and inflame the situation and spread the bad news or whatever. But why is that easier for us? It's like it's more effort for us to do that. And it's part of the devil's ability to get us to do things for him. Whereas if we simply chose not to do that, not to give into the desire for physical things, and therefore not spend our time pursuing them,
sure,
or not give into the intent or the willingness to inflame a situation or spread bad news, and just withhold ourselves from that, that is, it's easier... what is it, not done, than done. You know, there, to go out and help somebody and spend your effort, that's understandably harder to do because it takes time and effort and it doesn't necessarily return back to yourself. But in some of these situations, it's, as a Christian, you just don't engage in that. But for some reason, it's hard for us to not actively engage in some of these things.
I agree. I see where you're going. I agree with you. I guess my thought was, like on the tongue, sometimes it's easier to keep your mouth... You need to keep your mouth shut. And then sometimes we just don't. We say things we shouldn't, or say, you know, sometimes just to be quiet.
Right.
And then on the contentment, it's hard to be content. It's hard to, like, when you compare yourself to the world or others, you know, we have perspective. Like, you know, me and Amanda lived in a 2-bedroom apartment that got broken into twice, you know. I should be content with what I have. I should be thankful for what I have. Yes, I've worked hard to get there, but I know there's plenty of people who don't have near what I have. So I need to be content with whatever situation I have, because once again, it's all going to be temporary. I can't take any of this with me. So I need to be thankful for what I have and content for what I have. That was my lens, my thought process where I come through it. Yes?
It's interesting when you think of the context of Philippians 4, of course, this is the Apostle Paul.
Right.
He's writing this. Where is he at? He's in prison.
Prison.
What was he at before prison? Freedoms, wasn't really a rich man. He had, was going to go in persecutions. He had more freedom than he had now in prison. But now he's in prison. Here's an apostle. I feel this type of restriction. And know what he says he had to do. I had to learn this.
Right.
And so that, you know, if he had to learn it, much more should we have to continue to work on this thing to learn to be looking at.
And even more to your point, Rocky, he was on the path to power and wealth, right? I mean, that's where he was headed, but he chose not to. He saw the better way.
In a real practical, everyday situation, and of course with your lesson, if I understand that your track of thought, your employer offers you 30% increase in your wages, but you're going to have to be away from your family 6 months a year. And you know that you have an obligation to your family. You know you ought to put Christ first. It won't be a certainty that you can make it there where you can work. But it's easier said to turn that job down than done.
I think I could even make it harder than that. See, I mean, you take someone who becomes like a manager, sales manager, or operations manager. You might make more money, but your per hour rate went down. You're going to spend 12 hours at the office. I mean, I guess it's just through age and experience. You're like, I don't want that. I don't want the stress and the pressure and the time away from my family. I don't, and that's just me personally. I've seen it, so I know the other side. And most of y'all know my family. My parents were school teachers. They were home every night. You know, they were home by 3:30, 4 o'clock. So it's kind of that's my point of reference. Yes, sir.
Y'all have to look at it as in the beginning of this lesson where he said, you know, you have to show that you're a good employee.
You're exactly right.
That also has to weigh into that decision.
Yep, I agree. So it's a balance, right? It's yeah. And you know, sometimes you have to do it wrong, you know, not sin-wise, but like, I'm working too many hours. Like, I see my boss doing this, and that's just not for me. So, but no, I agree. You got to. It's a balance, and we're not always going to get it right. Well, it looks like we are out of time, but I want to go one quick number 8, Ephesians 6:3. Since we got some children in the room that. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. We're supposed to teach our children. We're supposed to be parents. How many times do you see parents as friends to their children, not parents? We're the ones that got to tell them what they need to hear, not what they want to hear. Discipline, it's not fun. But we do it because we love them, not because we want to be their friend. They're going to have plenty of friends, but they're only going to have one set of parents. Now, we have grandparents, but sometimes grandparents are a little more lenient than parents. We all know this. So, but thank you for your good comments.